Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for iOS Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Coming up, an iTunes match explainer, a big numbers calculator, and Renee Ritchie is here to show us which Apple Watch bands he likes best. All that and more on iOS
This Today. Episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all of the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out the Braintree V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, you get every way to pay. To learn more and to try out the sandbox, go to braintreepayments.com/iOS today.
Welcome to iOS Today. Leo Laporte is still on vacation, but today I am honored to welcome Renee Ritchie. Renee is from MacBreak Weekly and iMore, and he was on Twit yesterday. You're all over the place.
Leo, you won't come back from King's Landing. It's life is too good there, so the rest of us have to pick it up.
Yes, I know, and I don't know if you follow him on all of the social media, but
yes.
His pictures look, I don't know that I would come back either.
No, they're the worst. I mean, they look like something out of an epic romance or something. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, there's goulash, there's lederhosen. He's like doing all of the tourist things and looks like...
So much lederhosen. It's almost weaponized at this point, but it's magnificent.
So he will be back next week. But until then, we have you and we're going to talk about your picks. You brought some Apple Watch bands. Do you have all of the bands?
I do. I actually left them on the counter over there, so I'm going to run and get them during the first ad break. But I have a bunch of bands and a bunch of colors.
I have
all the ones that go on the 42 millimeter watch.
Okay, so no gold. You don't have the $1 million gold watch.
I don't have Beyonce privileges yet.
Yet. All right. Well, let's start with iOS 9, which was just released last week in public beta. And correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first time they've released a public beta for iOS.
Yeah, absolutely. They did OS 10 Yosemite last year, and they've done OS 10 El Capitan this year again. But this is the first time iOS has joined the public beta program.
So we should all immediately download it on all of our devices that we use for emergency things, right?
No, God, no. It's a beta. And when Apple says beta, it doesn't mean like it's one of those things that we've just gotten so used to seeing and it works anyway. They really mean beta. It's a bunch of bits that need testing. And that's why they put it out early so developers can see. So there might be bugs. There might be apps that aren't compatible. There might be back-end services that come in and out. There might be weird glitches in screen draws. There might be all sorts of things. They strongly, strongly recommend that you put it on a secondary device if you have one just to test with, or maybe if you have an iPhone, you put it on your iPad instead. But if you depend on your phone, like if you get into an accident and you have to call 911 or you run your business on it, you should stay away from non-production software.
So there's two different public betas. There's one for developers and one for the public, for anyone who wants to risk their device in this way. And you've downloaded both of them, but not on your primary device as instructed. So what did you download them on?
So I, by benefit of my job, I have just a bunch of iPhones. I think I still have one of each, basically. So I put iOS 6 developer beta on my iPhone 6. I have iOS public beta on my iPhone 6 Plus. I have iOS public beta on my iPhone 6. And I have 8.4 on my iPhone 5S and 8.3 on my iPhone 5 right now.
So you signed a non-disclosure agreement, which means you can't show video. So we can't take your screen and you can't show off all of the wonderful things it does or show off all of the bugs it has, right?
It's a little different for media this year. Apple originally had media. They just didn't care. It's not they didn't care. They had no provision for media. So if you wanted to download it, you signed the developer NDA, which is kind of very constraining. But for the last 2 years, they've said, you know, write about it, talk about it, sort of share your experiences with it. But we only ask for two things. Please don't post any videos and please don't post any screenshots. And the reason for that is it's sort of pragmatic, because there's been several instances where things have moved around during the beta and then people feel like something's been taken away from them. Like, you stole my button. It was there on the left and now it's gone. And then you have a bad sort of experience. You feel like you've lost something instead of gained something when it comes out.
Right. And I mean, and journalism moves so fast, and Twitter has, you know, all kinds of crazy headlines that may or may not be true. So, you know, you've already seen some things where people are like, oh, it's buggy. It's, you know, and if you're reading fast enough and you're not really paying attention, you might think that they, you know, that they've screwed up or they've, you know, dropped the ball. But really, this is a beta, and download it if you dare.
And Apple has a feedback app right on the public beta, so you can tap it. It's very easy to fill out, so you can send your feedback. The one thing I'd ask everybody to do, please don't leave reviews if apps are buggy on iOS 9, because the developer literally cannot fix it until Apple opens. There might be some things they can try, but they are not allowed to upload iOS 9 compatible betas until September. So you chose to run a beta, and it's going to trash this developer's reputation just because you are not, you know, reconciling those two facts together. So please don't review anything while you're running a beta.
That's good advice. What other advice do you have for best practices for people who have decided to download the beta?
You don't have to start fresh. You can. What happens with the public beta, it's very different than a developer beta, is that you download a certificate onto your device. It's a profile, a provisioning profile, the kind you use for other things on iOS. And that enables you to download iOS 9 through the software update feature that you've used for all your previous things. So you can just update it right in place, right on your device. But you never know what's going to happen with that. Sometimes there are some bad bits or some incompatibilities. So I almost always just scorch the earth and start fresh. Because it's not a device that I have to rely on, I don't worry about losing things like text messages or previous histories or things like that. And that lets me actually look at a fresh installation. And I do that every couple times there's a new beta, just to make sure that everything's starting off as fresh as possible.
So how old can we go back? How far can we go back in our iPhones to, you know, if we have an old one sitting around, what can we install it on?
Actually, pretty remarkably, iOS 9 runs on any device that can run iOS 8. That means it goes all the way back to 2011 with the iPad 2, the original iPad mini, the iPod Touch 5, and the iPhone 4S. So you can go a ways back.
So iOS 9 includes two-factor authentication, which didn't exist before. You have a whole piece on that. Explain what's new about that.
All right, so Apple previously had two-step authentication for a limited number of their services, and that involved going into your iCloud account, generating a recovery key, and doing several other things. Now they've got full two-factor, and there's some debate about what the difference is between two-step and two-factor. Technically, a factor just means a type of authentication. A password is something you know. For example, a Bluetooth dongle or a token is something you have, and a fingerprint or a retina scan is something you are. And you want to have more of these than just one, because that makes your system more secure. So Apple is using a password or a passcode that you remember. That's your iCloud password. And then they're also using a verification code, which is something they send to a trusted device, either with an automated phone call or more often a text or iMessage or Apple push notification. And then you get that, you type it in, and that along with your password enables you to add your account. And I should point out, you don't have to use this every time. No one wants to drive you crazy here. It's just if you add an account to a new device, if you completely wipe a device and reinstall it from scratch, if you log into a web browser for the first time, or you want to change your password, then it asks you for the verification token.
So at WWDC, when they announced a lot of the new features of iOS 9, they talked about Siri and how Siri was going to be smarter, and he or it was going to know more about you. And some discussions that came around about that is like, well, that's kind of why I use Apple products as opposed to Google products, because I don't want them to know so much. I'm okay with them, with Siri not working, because, you know, she's not scanning all my email and everything. So what's new? How has it been playing around with a new Siri?
So what's interesting is that Apple is not a cloud company like Google or Facebook. When you're a cloud company, everything looks like the cloud to you. Apple is a devices company, so they tend to be device-centric. And what they've done is, instead of uploading all your information to the cloud and then operating it on it there, combining everything together and then pushing the results back down to you, they're operating on the cloud where they need to, like to get movie times or transportation directions, anything that you don't personally have, anything that has to come from the internet. Then they push that down to your device, and then they mingle it with your data. Then they sort of operate on it. So So they never get access. All the stuff that is yours, your contacts, your calendar, your email, that stays on your device. And they sort of, instead of bringing you up to the cloud, they're bringing the cloud down to you. It has drawbacks in that it can't do everything that something like Google Now can do, because the data centers are huge and the amount of information they have access to is amazing. But if you are concerned about privacy and security, it can do a lot of it and in a much more secure and private way.
So how is the new Siri? Is she smarter?
It's cool. It's got a new interface that looks like the Apple Watch. So you sort of have these colorful waveforms and almost like that Knight Rider or Cylon going back and forth, which I find endlessly fascinating. And you can ask it. It's already tuned into Apple Music. So if you have iOS 8.4 above, you can ask all sorts of cool stuff to Apple Music. And now it has access to photos. But they've all also sort of merged what used to be Spotlight and is now called Search with Siri. And Siri has this new engine called Jarvis, which is a big geek, thing with Iron Man movies and stuff, that's much faster and can provide much better results. And because of that, you can now swipe over to a search screen and start typing in like things like sports scores instead of having to say them if you're at a dinner party or you're in another place where it's not really polite to talk to your phone. But you also get recommendations. Like Siri will know that maybe I text message Megan around lunchtime every day. So around lunchtime, her avatar will appear there. Or maybe I've just had a conversation with Leo and his avatar will appear there so I can continue talking to him. Maybe I just downloaded an app and I haven't opened it yet, so that app will appear there. Or maybe I use Twitter first thing in the morning and Twitter shows up there so I can press it right away and go right to it. So it's trying to predict your behavior and then adding in location and other information. If for example, we have a meeting. I have a meeting with Jason later today. That Jason's contact icon can be there in case I want to ping him. And does that with places. It does that with news. It just tries to predict the things you're going to want to do and make sure they're there for you.
And do you have your Siri voice turned to sound like Jarvis to the British man?
No, I know George has done that. I had mine for a while on the British female accent. Then I put it back just the standard accent because I'm trying to see if there are any. There shouldn't be, but just in case there are any differences with what it understands. Because technically they've separated how you talk to Siri from how Siri talks to you. But I like to experiment with that stuff.
Yeah. Have you put in a little request for a Canadian sounding Siri?
What you see, Canada's like America, and that there's such diverse accents from coast to coast that people will argue about whether it should be Vancouver Siri or Toronto Siri or Nova Scotia Siri, and then we just descend into rebellion and chaos.
Well, is there anything else about iOS 9 that is worth telling everyone about?
There's just a lot of really cool stuff. Like the Notes app has been redone completely. So now you can embed everything from web pages to iWork documents to links to map results inside them. You can put checklists in it. There's a new News app, which is not exactly like Facebook Instant Articles because it's not native. It is a WebKit structure. But instead of Newsstand, where all the apps were trapped in that folder, you now have News, where a bunch of articles are contained inside that app. There's new multitasking on iPad, which is awesome. You can now have more than one app on the screen at the same time. If you have an iPad Air, you can have two apps on the screen and a picture-in-picture video, which, it's meant to enhance your productivity, but if you're watching, like, the Flash season finale, it kind of balances things back out, I think.
And have you experienced a lot of any bugs with that? I mean, I know we preface this by saying, of course, there are, but is it as stable as you thought it would be, those kinds of features?
It's pretty much on par with previous betas, and that is like the hard thing about betas is people always ask, is beta 3 stable? Can I finally put it on my phone? Maybe, but maybe beta 4 will be horrible, or maybe beta 5 will be terrific. There's just no way of knowing. So right now, beta 3 is working really well for me. It's working better than beta 2 and beta 1 did. I have no idea what will happen with beta 4, though, so I always just keep stressing caution.
Well, let's move on to iTunes Match. Georgia Dow and I talked a little bit about this last week. We talked about Serenity's excellent explanation on iMore about the difference between iTunes Match and the new streaming service Apple Music. Some people were having complaints, and I think they have already made some updates to it to make it a little bit more easy to understand. But tell us a little bit about why you still use iTunes Match and why you use it and why it's worth it to you.
So absolutely. So they're very different services. I think the messaging around it has been unnecessarily confusing. I don't think intentionally. I just think it's such a big thing that it's been hard to explain. But Apple Music is a streaming music service. You can get almost any... You can get pretty any song on the Apple Music catalog, almost any song on the iTunes catalog, and just ask Siri to play it or just search for it and start playing it. You don't have to buy it anymore. It'll just stream anything that Apple has in its catalog down to your device. What iTunes Match does, though, is it's a music locker service. What that does is take the music you have on your Mac or Windows PC, upload it to Apple's cloud and then let you stream it back down from any device. So where Apple Music is about Apple's music, iTunes Match is about your music. It could be stuff you've ripped from CDs. It could be stuff you've taken off of old LPs. It's just anything that you have on your computer. And the traditionally, it would be a pain because you'd have to copy it or get out a cable and sync it. Or if you were traveling and didn't remember to sync it, you had no access to it. But with iTunes Match, it's just all uploaded. If Apple has a better version of the track because they're using AAC audio, 320 some odd bits of it, they will replace it with that better version. So if you have just a really bad CD rip from, you know, your high school days, you'll get the best quality Apple has available. If Apple can't match it, if you listen to a lot of, you know, maybe international music or it's music you recorded live, something like that, it'll just upload your version to Apple servers. And then all of that is available to you with the same restrictions as Apple Music. You can authorize 10 devices, five of which can be computers. But I find it just, I a long time ago, just ripped tons and tons of CDs. I was going through a decluttering phase and I didn't want to have cabinets filled with them anymore. So I ripped them, put them on a drive, and I thought they would just be sitting there. And now they're just available to me anywhere. And the new music app sort of lets you have Apple Music and your music all in the same place, so you barely even notice anymore. And it's really cool. It does cost $25 a year, which is about $2 a month. But for the convenience alone, I find it well worth it.
So we should mention for people that don't know that the Apple Music is $9.99 per month.
Yes.
Or $14.99 for a family plan. And you can get the first 3 months free whenever you start. So not when it was released 2 weeks ago. But if you start right now, if you haven't done it, you'll have until, I guess, maybe mid-October at this point to try it out. So what you recommend if people do have ripped a lot of music, if they especially have a lot of music that's not available for whatever reason, it's obscure, or maybe people listen to a lot of stuff that Apple hasn't made deals with, you recommend this as a good way to have your music when you want it, wherever you want it.
Yeah, like if you have a bunch of Prince CDs and he's pulled all those off Apple Music, this is your way to get them streaming.
Yeah, I was going to mention Prince because he's the only one I can think of right now that is still holding out. One thing that Serenity pointed out and also Georgia and I talked about was that don't get rid of that drive that you have.
Yes.
If you know, because you might decide you don't want to keep Apple Music, and then what would happen if you decided not to keep Apple Music? What would you have to do with?
Well, Apple Music is distinct from this. The never ever get rid of your backups. If you only have one copy of something, you have zero copies of it. You need several backups. With iTunes Match, the big deal is that it's DRM free because it's your music. Apple doesn't have to have deals and licensing agreements with the record labels that forces them to put DRM on this stuff. So you upload it, it is yours. You download it again. If you unsubscribe from iTunes Match, you have like 30 days to get your stuff all downloaded again before it goes away. So you want to make sure that if, you know, by some chance all your carefully made backups spontaneously combusted, you download a complete copy of your library first. But it just overall, it's a really good, really consumer-friendly service.
So the next thing I wanted to talk about was the Echo Bee 3 Wi-Fi thermostat that I assume you've installed it in your home. I think that's the one that Georgia also installed in her home. Or is that an
old version? We installed it together at Georgia's because where I live, there's baseboards. And there's a thermostat in every room, so it's not practical. But she lives in a place with proper central climate control. So we put the original version there, and then this only was announced this week, so we've just ordered it. And it's identical, except it ties into Apple's HomeKit service, which is their home automation framework. And that gives it just a lot of really, really cool features.
So that was a bit of a frustration because the one that she just installed last month doesn't work with HomeKit, right?
Yeah, it upset some people, and rightly so. But the thing is that this is something that Apple does. Sometimes it's for the good of consumers. Sometimes it's not for the good of consumers. In this case, Apple has very strict requirements for the kind of chipsets that you use in the devices because they want to be able to securely transmit your password. The whole idea is you log in with iCloud and then you never have to worry about controlling those devices again. They just work. And because of that, it transmits credentials back and forth. And also it has to do it reliably. There have been a lot of cases with home automation equipment where you plug one in and your whole Wi-Fi router goes down because it's not using good quality Wi-Fi chips. So in order to qualify for HomeKit, you have to be able to have a reliable signal and to do the authentication. So people who didn't include these kinds of chips to begin with had to sort of reissue the devices. And no one has to upgrade. Your old device works fine. It's just if you want to use it with HomeKit and get all the advantages like remote control and Siri control, you have to have the applicable, the new version that's compatible with it.
So what can Siri do for you with HomeKit?
It is so cool. So basically, the way HomeKit works is you set up homes. If you have multiple homes, like maybe you have a vacation home or something else, you set up homes, then you set up rooms, you can set up zones. And once all of that is done, you can just start telling Siri what you want. Like you can, especially with iOS 9, because it adds a bunch of really cool HomeKit stuff, you can walk in, hold down the button, say, Siri, game time. And if you have the right accessories, it'll dim your lights, turn on the television, turn on the surround sound system, and switch the input over to, you know, maybe your Xbox or something. Or at night, if you get into bed and you say, you know, good night, Siri, although I wish it would do like crash the compound, it'll make sure your garage door is closed, your front door is locked, your lights are all off, and the coffee maker is set for tomorrow morning. So it's a way of taking all the complexity of all these different and sometimes seemingly incompatible home automation accessories and sort of abstracting them away with Siri as the interface.
So the Echo Bee, is that just a thermostat or that's the light, that's the whole home system?
So there's a variety of HomeKit equipment. Echo Bee just does the thermostat. The cool thing about it, it's very similar to Google's Nest, but why I like it better is because it has remote sensors. So, for example, you can put this in your main room and then put the remote sensors in different parts of your house. And if it detects people moving around, it will change those areas of the house. So it's not like, oh, we're all freezing on one side and boiling on the other. It's sort of intelligent enough to move it around. And it also has an idea of how many people are in the room. And I mentioned this, I think, on Mac Break once, but I got to interview a CEO of Ecobee at CES. And he said that, you know, he started seeing a bunch of people arriving in his living room while he was traveling. And he just called home and said, hey, kids, are you having a party by any chance?
That's excellent. Yeah, my sister has a high schooler and she sometimes uses Find My Friends for that. But that is much more accurate.
No, absolutely. And you can get, there are all sorts of other things. Insteon, I think, is one. And there's several HomeKit manufacturers who do have hubs that let you connect lights and window treatments. And with iOS 9, it's going to do a whole bunch of different security systems and door locks. And it's going to slowly, we talked about this on Twit last night, but it's going to just slowly get to the point where I think everything we buy in 10, 20 years will just be connected with radios radios and chipsets.
And do you have any security concerns with these devices?
So, yeah, absolutely. The reason I didn't go all in on it previously is because they didn't have the security, and a lot of people didn't want to put devices on their networks that weren't as secure as the networks. They felt like they were opening up big holes. And whether you really are a target or not, it's hard to say, but we just all feel better locking our front doors. So now that they have these new chipsets that are much more secure, I feel way more confident having the stuff around me.
And do you feel more confident with something like this than you would with Nest?
Nest should have HomeKit should have HomeKit compatibility relatively soon. I can't imagine they're going to take much longer to do it. And Google is busy working on, I think it's Bristol, which is their version, the code name of their version for it. Brillo. Yeah. So I hopefully everyone will have this. And I think that's the best thing. It's sort of like CarPlay and Android Auto, where you don't really have to care about which phone you have or which system you belong to. You'll just get a great experience with both. And if people want to tap into the millions and hundreds of millions of Android or iOS devices, they'll support one or the other or both, and it just makes better quality equipment for all of us.
Well, Renee, I'm going to let you go collect some of those Apple Watch bands, and we are also going to give us some tips on how to control Apple Music with Siri and some other tips and some tips from you. But first, I wanted to let you know that this episode of iOS Today is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is an excellent service for something that we all need to do, and that is eat dinner. Whether you live by yourself or with roommates or with a family, Blue Apron is a great service that combines the act of going to the grocery store and cooking, because, you know, most people are too busy to do both on a regular basis and really enjoy it. So what Blue Apron does is they are a service. They will send you fresh ingredients perfectly proportioned with step-by-step recipe instructions, including beautifully printed pictures on very stiff paper, because I know I've spilled all kinds of things on on them and I can still read the recipes and use them again. You can make cooking makes cooking healthy meals easy and fun. No trips to the grocery store, no waste from unused ingredients. Each balanced meal is 500 to 700 calories per serving, and it's so yummy you would never know. Cooking takes half an hour, shipping is free, the menus are always new, and they will never send the same meal twice. They work around your schedule and your dietary preferences, and Blue Apron's experts source only the best ingredients, seasonal ingredients, for incredible meals like chicken and basil fettuccine pasta with mascarpone and plum tomatoes, or stir-fried Szechuan eggplant. You will cook incredible meals and be blown away by the quality and the freshness. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. Check out this week's meals and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's right, two free meals just by going to blueapron.com/twit. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of iOS Today. One thing I forgot to mention before is that all of the links to everything that Renee has written and the things that he's talked about, those will be at twit.tv/iOS Today. So let's start with Apple Music Siri commands. I also host iFi for the iPhone every week, a 10-minute podcast, and I did a few of those. I tried out, but you have a whole long list of things that Siri can do with Apple Music. What are some of your favorites?
It's so great. So it's kind of hard to separate what Siri can do with the music app as opposed to Apple Music, because there's a lot of overlap. Apple Music basically feeds the music app. So some of the things, for example, it's not clear and maybe not possible to just shuffle anything and everything. There's a way to shuffle individual things, but if you want to just shuffle all music or shuffle all artists, it's not as clear how to do that with the physical interface. But you can just tell Siri, play, or just shuffle, or shuffle Britney Spears, or you can do all those things with Siri that maybe you can't find on the interface. So if you ever have trouble sort of finding a control, my first recommendation is just try Siri, because half the time it'll work anyway.
Well, you were talking earlier about like how it can be uncomfortable sometimes to talk to Siri when you're in a cubicle or in a public place, and I have gotten a lot of questions about how do I shuffle my music, I hate Apple Music because it doesn't give me a way to shuffle. And one thing that I noticed, if you're playing your music, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think if you just play a song, it's automatically on shuffle.
I think it depends on how you've previously been playing music. It's not going to change the default if you start playing something new. And I'm not sure, like, for example, if you say play the top 25 songs from 1983, it might just play those linearly, where you'd have to say shuffle the top 25 songs from 1983. I think the behavior can change often enough that if you actually really want it to shuffle, you're better off telling it to shuffle.
Right. Yeah. So you just say shuffle my music,
yeah,
and she will shuffle. Yeah. She says she'll tell you like what's the most popular song of a certain date. But I noticed that she'll play like play songs from the 1970s, but I'm not sure if that's just because she can say that or if it's just like there are playlists like songs from the 70s.
It looks like, and some people complain that it's U.S. only. As someone who's seen the top Canadian ranks, I'm happier that they play the U.S. versions. Some people in the U.K. would rather U.K. versions. But what it does is, I'm not as familiar with the decades. I've been trying to figure out if it really does mix the decades as well as it does the years. But it will take whatever the top 100 songs are. And by default, it'll play 25. But you can ask for 10. You can ask for 50 if you want to. And then it'll take those songs and just start playing them. And I believe it's in sequential order. So if you want it to change, you can just say shuffle.
We have a live audience today, and they have some kids with us, which made me think this. I got this tip that sometimes, if you're just saying, like, play music and you're in the car with children and you don't want necessarily explicit music, you can go into the restrictions and, play and, go in and say don't play anything that is explicit. That, of course, music ratings are different than movie ratings. We should say, like, they're kind of self-regulatory, just like podcast ratings. But it does a good job of sort of limiting the really explicit content.
Yeah, you'll get the quote-unquote radio versions most often.
Right. So can you tell Siri to just play don't play explicit music? Do you know?
I actually haven't tried. We'll have to test that out.
Yeah.
That's a really good question.
Yeah. I would like to spring one on you.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's how I learned.
Yeah. What else? What other things does Siri do with Apple Music?
If you want Apple Music specific stuff, you can, for example, just by asking for songs, like you can say, play Don't Stop Believing and it'll play the Journey version, but you could say play Don't Stop Believing by Glee. You can say play Smooth Criminal and it'll play Michael Jackson, or you can say play Smooth Criminal Alien Ant Farm and it'll play the Alien Ant Farm cover. Those kinds of things are super cool. You can also say play more like this and it'll go and search around and try to play songs that are very similar to this one. If you don't like it, you can say skip. If you skipped by mistake, or if you just want to go back, you can say go back. You can tell it to add stuff to your... There's an up next queue on iOS now, which didn't exist before. And that sort of replaces the DJ mode. So you can just say, add this to up next or play next and tell it what you want to play next and it'll add that to your queue. So there's all these things to sort of make sure that you get a ton of music that you want and don't have to leave the experience too often.
Yeah, you can also have Siri add songs to your music too. I think if you like something, you can say, add this to my music and she will...
Yeah, if it's playing, and if it's not playing, you just say, like, for example, add the new Rush album to my, and it'll go out and find that. If you're not sure who's playing it, so you don't know what to ask for, you can just say, what is this? Who plays this? What album is this? If music is playing in Starbucks, you can hold it up and say, what is this? And it'll use Shazam to identify it for you. So it's got some really nifty features.
So you're all in on Apple Music.
Yeah, I really like it. And, when I first started listening to it, Beats One, I was highly skeptical because I haven't listened to radio like that since it last existed. All radio now, and Alex Lindsay can explain this way better than I can, but it's mostly programmatic and algorithm and institutionally delivered. And I miss the DJs that there used to be around, that's still around in England, but aren't really around in North America so much. And this won me over. I heard Zane Lowe talking, and I heard some of the shows, and I really liked them. It was this shared social experience. But then I got used to... Anytime I wanted to, pressing the button and just asking Siri to play me anything without, whether it's in my catalog, my library or not, and it just plays. So I have a song in my head. I just press the button. I say, play that song. If I hear something, if I remember something, it literally is music on demand. And once you have that, I told Georgia about it and I started showing her how you could play all the cover songs and she actually hit me. She was so excited.
And she doesn't really like music. She was like, other times I've tried to get her to talk about Apple Music. She's like, I don't like music that much.
And now she's all in. I mean, it once it's under your control and you don't sort of feel nickel and dime, but you also don't feel like it's a big hassle to get it. It's sort of like the ultimate jukebox. It plays whatever you want, whenever you want it to.
Right. Well, let's see. I guess it's time for us to look at the watch bands. So now you've been talking about how you've been wanting to get new bands. Now, are you part of a program where Apple just sends these to you, or is this just your own personal interest in as many bands as possible?
So I got one band from when I got my original iPhone, Apple Watch review unit. It was with the Melanez band, which is really, really nice. It is metal that is so fine and so well put together that it actually feels like cloth. And it's really nice because of all the little holes in it, it really breathes very well. So when it's on your wrist, it never sort of feels clammy or sticky, and it's very solid. So that's the one that I had before mine actually shipped. And mine took a long time to ship because I ordered the black space... Yeah.
That's the one I black. Have, too. Same one.
That's so nice.
Yeah, I love it.
It's ridiculous. It's like I tried to describe the metal. I was having a conversation with John Gruber, and we both got it, I think, within 6 hours of each other. It feels like dragon scales or whatever the Batmobile is made out of. It doesn't feel like normal metal.
So you're not talking... Maybe you don't have the same one. Are you talking about the band?
Yeah, the band.
But not the Milanese Loop.
Not the Milanese Loop.
We don't have... No, I have the Sport. Now, which one is that you're talking about?
This is the black link bracelet.
Oh, and that one that feels like Batman.
Yeah, because it's not like the stainless steel link bracelet feels like stainless steel, but because there's a diamond-like coating applied to this, that's really hard. It's what they put around a lot of the tools that do machine work. It feels super dense, like Kryptonian alloy or something. And it's my favorite. I've tried almost all the bands now, and it's just my favorite one.
And now the bands, you don't need to have... You can switch them from the Sport to the other watch. They all work. It seemed like they kind of hid that in the beginning, or was I just not paying attention? Did everyone always know you could switch back and forth?
The first time I went to the original Apple Watch event in September, I asked them that, and they said, yeah, you can, and as long as it's the 42 and the 42 and the 38 and the 38, and you can kind of fake that. It doesn't look great, but you can kind of fake that because the lock mechanism still works. But as long as they're the same size, they're compatible. Some people were worried about corrosion because sometimes you put metal and stainless steel together, it produces bad results. But Apple's really good at coating their materials. So maybe really cheap third-party bands I'd be careful of. But with Apple stuff, it works really well. Other people have been worried that the stainless steel lugs might twist inside the aluminum case. Mm-hmm. But if you're careful with it, it's a very long wedge that you're putting it into, and it's so far been very stable. We've been trying it for, I think, 2 months by now.
And it's not hard to get to switch them out.
No, it's super easy. The thing I like about this, and this is one of those only Apple things that people get mad when you say, but the watch industry has not, when it comes to bands, and I've had tons of, well, not super high-end watches, but nice watches over the years, and the bands were always a pain to change because you'd have to get, you have to be a jewelry, like a jeweler, or, you know, get your own set of tools. And with this, you really, all you have to do first, this is the link bracelet. So there's little buttons on all of them, and you just pull and they come apart, and you can size it yourself that way. It's super easy. And then once that's done, you just press and you slide the band right out, and then you can swap in any other band you want. And it really couldn't be easier. And that's the kind of thoughtful consideration that an industry like watches, they need people to enter them to sort of disrupt like that. And I think that we'll see this in a lot of pure watches soon. It'll be a benefit to everybody.
So what other bands do you have there?
So put that aside. These are the leather loops, which are really nice because they're almost like, I'll jokingly call them the Lululemon pants of bands because they're just loops. So you can adjust them as much as you want. There's no holes in them that keep you locked to certain pre-decided settings. It's like an elastic waistband. You just put them on, turn the magnet over, and they lock in, and they work well. And they come in a variety of colors. There's the blue, the brown. There's also a beige version, a black version. And these are nice because they're casual. And also leather, unlike metal and unlike the fluoroelastomer, it absorbs just a little bit of moisture, so you never feel like it's clammy against your skin.
So what are those called?
Those are the leather loop.
Leather loop
bands.
I took a flight to LA over the weekend, and it was the first time I'd flown, and I was like trying to get my watch with my boarding pass on the thing, and I get a little embarrassed because I feel like everyone around is going to be like, what are you trying to do? But the guy who was working at the airport was like, this is what I do with my watch, and he had the leather loop, like the blue one. I was like, oh. So yeah, I like that one. And so you're not really supposed to exercise in those though, right? Or you're not supposed to like sweat in those?
No. Well, I mean, like any leather band, I have the classic buckle here as well, which is a little slightly more formal version of leather. Like any leather band, you want to be careful around moisture in general. Like you can exercise in it. It's not going to cause too much damage, but you're better off using something like the sports band around here. Here, the one that you're wearing, or the right. fluoroelastomer sport band for that. Because it's water shower proof, whatever.
Right. Now, do you shower in your watch?
I have. I mean, Tim Cook famously has said he showers in his, and I originally thought that meant that he had like a roll of Apple Watches that he could just pull out a new one every time he finished and strap it on. But you know, he was very adamant about it that he showers in it, and it is water resistant. It's got an official water resistance rating, so you shouldn't submerge it for long periods of time. But something like a shower is
perfectly fine. Shower in mine, but then I've heard people say like you're slowly doing damage to it, and it's, you know, that you don't even understand. So I don't know if that's true or not.
My life is causing damage to it.
That's true. And sometimes you just need to reply to a text message while you're taking a shower. I mean, everybody,
absolutely.
Since the beginning of time, we've always needed to do that. And now
control your lights or do something. I mean, like, we're not animals.
Right. So do you have the modern buckle too?
I don't. So the modern buckle is only available for the 38 millimeter. So Trinity Caldwell, my colleague, has been all over the modern buckles. And I should mention the leather loop is only available for the 42. So there's a couple bands that are exclusive still.
Okay. Well, iBookery in our chat room would like to know if you are opening an Apple Watch band shop with two P's and an E.
So my hope for the future, and Apple hasn't said anything about this or not, but I hope that the bands stay compatible for at least a few generations, and then whatever case I get for Apple Watch 2 or Apple Watch 3 will still work with all these bands. And there's going to be the Made for Apple Watch program soon, where third parties can make officially supported and sanctioned bands. So we should have a lot of selection. And I thought I was insane at first because all these bands aren't cheap. But then I talked to several people, you know, like my boss, Kevin Mitchell, who's a big watch guy, Vince Nguyen from Slash Gear, big watch guy, John. And they all have like these Panerai straps that are $500. Or Omega straps that are $1,000. I mean, the amount of money people spend on watch straps, I think it's the undisclosed dirty secret of the fashion industry. We're not aware of it the way we are of shoes or purses or dresses or stuff.
Right.
Well, but they're expensive and plentiful.
Yeah, they're not as they are as expensive as Lululemon pants. But you know, people would say that some people have more than they need of those also.
Yeah, true.
So I saw this article in The Atlantic that I wanted to discuss with you, sort of about the watch. A new study from the American Psychological Association says that the push notifications that we get on our phone or on our watch are just as distracting as a phone call or responding to the watch. So, you know, a lot of us have said, well, we love the watch because I can see, I can get a notification and then I'm done with it. I'm not interacting with my phone anymore. But now this study says that these kinds of push notifications will just make us distracted. They used all kinds of, you know, scary words about what everyone always says when they talk about, you know, to someone who says, like, multitasking is so helpful to me. Like, it's the same thing. So what do you think about that?
So I have to point out, unlike Georgia, I'm not a psychotherapist. So what I'm going to say is a bunch of hooey and bunk. But I have been using technology for a long time, and I have some closely held beliefs. And one of them is that these are tools. It's sort of like a pencil or a sword. They're only as good or bad as the person using them. And I'm sure there are people who do incredibly harmful things with notifications. I'm sure there's people who hit themselves in the head with tablets. There's all sorts of bad behaviors out there. But for me, the watch does a couple things. One is several years ago, I just turned off notifications almost blanketly. I have phone calls still come through, SMS messages still come through, VIP mail. I really wish Apple would move VIP away from being a mail feature and make it a contact feature. So I could say, for example, everyone at Twit is a VIP. And then if you email me or message me, I'll still get that. But my carrier telling me about their new NHL bundle deal won't get through. So I wish it was a little more granular, but all told, I have very few things on my watch that actually disturb me. And the things that do disturb me, I consider important enough that if I didn't know about them, I'd be stressed. I'd be stressed wondering if that email had come or if that, you know, if that person got home safely or if that thing was delivered. And I would be checking my phone and doing things. And that's a high stress state that's continuous. So maybe I get one or two notifications. I look at them. I go, okay, it's not urgent. But my ability to just not have to worry, you know, taking it off my mental shelf and putting it, making it the watch's job to do, significantly de-stresses me. And because I have even less notifications on my watch, I don't have Twitter notifications. I open Twitter enough. I don't need to be notified about Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or any of that stuff. It really is the stuff that's important to me. And there are settings. You can set it to choose your comfort level. If you start to get nervous that you're missing something, you can amp it up. If you're starting to feel interrupted, you can amp it down. But there's only ever so much a system can do. As human beings, we have to have the personal responsibility of finding our best comfort zone and sort of adjusting it to meet that.
So what about the notifications that are built into the watch, like, you know, reminders to stand or, you know, you've reached your activity level or, you know, those kinds of things. Do you have those turned off?
You know, so Georgia turned those off because she found them annoying. And, you know, like, they could be smarter. Like, if it detects you're moving at 60 kilometers an hour or 50 miles an hour, or whatever, it should know you're in a car probably and can't stand up. But even the way it is now, I sit and I work at home and I'm typing or, you know, editing all day, and I'll forget to eat if I'm not careful. So those kind of notifications, whenever that goes off, I stand up and I go and get a glass of water, and that it makes me better as a human being, and I want to fill up those rings and I want to get those, and that has motivated me to live a better lifestyle. So the opposite of interrupting, so it isn't the opposite. I needed those interruptions. I desperately, in order to maintain base level human functionality, needed those notifications. Otherwise, if I was like a person who walked around all day, I'd probably turn them off.
Right. Yeah. It's very different to be notified that Taylor Swift is trending on Twitter than it is that, you know, you need to go to the bathroom. You haven't stood up in 4 hours.
Tay-Tay is urgent. I mean, you can't deny her.
Yes. All right. Well, we're going to be back. I know you have hopefully remembered to pick out a funny hat. If not, make one out of paper really quickly.
I'll go get it now.
And you're going to tell me your favorite app of the week or your favorite app that you're loving right now in just a minute. But first, I wanted to say that this episode of iOS Today is brought to you also by Braintree. And Braintree is code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. Braintree SDK makes it easy to offer multiple mobile payment types. You can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, and more, all with a simple integration. If you're working on building a mobile app and you want the right payments API, you should definitely check out Braintree. With one simple integration, you get every way to pay, and developers They've got you covered. Don't worry about taking days to integrate your payments with Braintree. It is done in minutes. It's simple. It's secure. If you don't have time, you can give them a call. They will handle the integration for you and walk you through it. The Braintree code supports Android, iOS, and JavaScript clients. They have SDKs in 7 languages: .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, Ruby. It's elegant code with clear documentation. Only 10 lines of in-app code. Braintree gives you an easy way to accept multiple payment types with one integration. They have quick, knowledgeable developer support. If you ever have any questions, they will be there for you. So right now, you can start accepting Apple Pay, PayPal, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, whatever is next, you'll be able to accept all with the one single integration. With Braintree V.0 SDK, there's just one small snippet of code, and you are all set up in less than 10 minutes. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee free, you can go to braintreepayments.com/iOS today. I polled our studio audience about which hat. This one makes my hair a little puffy. We call it Hair Shark. And there it is. What do you think? You got one? Oh, your WWDC hat.
I thought I had a toque, a Canadian's toque, and I left it in my car. I thought that would have been much more hilarious, but I may do.
Maybe if you wear it to the side or backwards. Excellent. Okay.
There we go.
Now I feel much better with this.
I'll hang my Apple Watch around my neck and it'll be perfect. Yeah, boy.
That's exactly what I was looking for. And which I almost forgot. I have been, both weeks that Georgia was here, we talked about your martial arts, and that's how you met. And I asked her several times if she thought she could beat you in a fight. And now with your hat that way, I'm not sure. What do you think?
She is there are people who have fighter's instinct, and there are people who can train to learn the techniques. She is definitely the former. I am the latter. So she would most likely whip the floor with me.
Okay, so she has the training in her.
She has the fighter's instinct.
Okay. And you learned.
And she is a strategic genius.
And so you studied Kenpo with her, or Jiu-Jitsu?
A long time ago, we did Wing Chun and then Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Okay. All right, so I'll start since we've shown a lot of your picks. My pick this week is called Fireflies, and I found it because I don't know if you're familiar with William Joyce, who is a children's book writer, and he wrote a lot of books. I don't know if you saw the movie Meet the Robinsons, but it was based on one of his books. He's also done Pixar movies. I think he had a hand in some of the Toy Story movie characters, and he has a new book, and I started to realize that he has a whole studio that does all these awesome illustrated apps for kids, beautiful. And this one I thought was great because I don't know if you spent your summers as a child collecting fireflies. Did you, Renee?
We have mostly mosquitoes here. I didn't really see many fireflies.
We don't have fireflies out on the West Coast, but I grew up, I was young on the East Coast, and there were lots of fireflies. And so this is basically a simple app. It's one of those really simple apps that just kind of point out what to do. You just open it, not a lot of instructions, and you just go out into the woods and collect fireflies. It's telling me what to do. There we
That's
go.
Awesome.
I can turn... Okay, now I want to collect them. There we go. So you can control it, and I can put them right in there, and you can move around. It's really beautiful. The other thing that I thought was cool about this, if you have younger kids, you can also use this as a nightlight, and it will automatically just turn off in 15 minutes, and it has that beautiful night music also playing along with it. And no fireflies were harmed in the making of this game. So this
not one, even Malcolm Reynolds.
I don't know that. Oh, from Firefly.
Yeah.
Okay. I tried to watch Firefly, but it was a while ago. And Serenity, and I have to say I'm losing some geek cred here, but I don't watch either.
They were very limited. So there's not much to watch.
This is the directions, which are set up so that you can only get if you know what 5 times 8 is, which luckily I do. You can use the app. You can make different colors, make purple, make green, and I just really liked this app, and there are a couple more, so check that out. I'll do that. What do you got?
So I had to pick either the most ironic or the most poetic app possible. So I figured because it was iOS today, I'd pick a Google app. Okay. And Google has this Labs thing, almost like how Microsoft has its Labs, and it keeps spawning these ridiculously awesome little project apps. This is called Ivy, and the icon for this, I'll hold it up just so that you can see, is a little, I think it's a raccoon type creature, but it's called the Big Number Calculator. And I have absolutely no math abilities. I tried really hard, and then a friend of mine, Leanna, told me that math was theoretical and just took the underpinnings of the universe out from under me. So I basically gave up. So I thought this would also be funny because I have no idea what to do with it. But it sounded so cool. And the way they describe it is an experimental big number calculator. And again, the idea that a calculator is experimental just destroys my belief in the foundations of the universe. But what it does is it uses exact rational arithmetic so it can handle arbitrary precision. It also supports high precision irrational values that result from operations such as square root. Values may be put as integers, rationals, or floating point values. And the idea of an experimental calculator being irrational to me is just fantastic.
I downloaded it also. I wanted to say also it could not be more different than my beautiful little fireflies. I have no idea what any of this stuff is.
What do you do with this? Like, use it to figure out the entropy point of the universe? I'm not sure what the use case is.
Hopefully, they're not just trying to distract us. Like, this is, you know, when I think of, like, DARPA robots, like, that's what they have in here. Like, they know what to do with it. The problem is we don't know what to do with it.
Well, that's true. They bought Boston Dynamics. So they have all those scary spider dog zombie robots.
They do. So if you need to make really, really large calculations, Ivy, and it's free, right?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure if you need it, you know what it is, you know what it does, and you'll be really, really happy with it. I put in some numbers, and it added them together for me, which is what, you know, I thought a calculator should do. So I feel like I'm underutilizing it, and it's not really happy with me, but I still like the idea of it.
Right. It is, you know, it's ironic, that cute little icon, and yeah. Yeah, it's math. I don't know, do we have any mathematicians? Any mathematicians in the... No.
Any experimental mathematicians? Yeah. Anyone want to disprove four to us while we're doing the show?
Well, I don't know if I mentioned why we wear hats, but it's the AppCap segment. It's our favorite app. It also signals the end of the show, and it's just something to be silly. And I thank you for going along with me and wearing the funny hat to the side.
Sure. I can even... Let's peel the cap back before...
So
I feel like Patrick Norton.
Oh, that, yeah. No, that you do look more like him. So if anyone is interested in Renee's take on this week's news, you can download the episode from Twit yesterday, or you can watch every week. You're on MacBreak Weekly. You do the iMore podcast, which is excellent. You and Georgia and Serenity and Peter.
Yep.
And he's great. He's a hardware guy. If you're sick of hearing just about iOS, that's right. He mostly talks about hardware, right?
He knows about all those chipset things.
Yeah. Did you ask him about this math app?
No, I'm not. I'm sure he'd use it to like add and subtract numbers, but I don't know what he'd do with it beyond that.
So you're at Renee Ritchie on Twitter.
Yes.
And where else? Any place else that people can find you?
I do a podcast with a bunch of developer friends called Debug, and we try to interview someone interesting every week. Last week we had Ken Case from the Omni Group talking about going all in on iPad and what they're doing with the Apple Watch. And this week we have Don Melton, who created WebKit and Safari for Apple, joining Jim Ray, previously of Mule Designs and now from a California web magazine, to talk about whether Safari really is the new IE. Spoilers, no.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Renee. And I will wave to you from behind my desk when you do MacBreak Weekly on Wednesday. Or is it Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Tuesday. Okay. And of course, anyone can download MacBreak Weekly whenever you want at twit.tv, the audio or the video version. And you can also download iOS Today at twit.tv. And you can join our subreddit, which we have, which is just at reddit.com/iOS Today. And thank you so much, Renee, for joining me. And I will see you soon.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Great. Take care.
Thank you.
And thank you for watching and listening and participating in the subreddit and for emailing me. We will have more of your questions and more of your voicemails next week on iOS Today.